From Friday night football to the county fair. From picnics in the park to hometown parades. From big cities to small towns, we are proud to serve our communities. Last year, we volunteered 19,000 hours and donated $5 million to local charities. Because lending a hand to a neighbor and investing in the people and places around us is the right thing to do. We are Park National Bank, and we are proud to serve you.
Member FDIC.
Inspiring interviews with today's top landlords. This is the Rental Income Podcast. And now, Dan Lane.
If you are just starting out with rental properties and trying to figure out how to buy your very first property, I wrote an ebook that'll walk you through the five steps to buy your first rental. You can download it right now. It's totally free. Just go to landlordgift.com. On episode number 106, Andrew Holmes joined us, and he said something that really resonated with me. It's something that I think about a lot. He said that with rentals in the short term, you need to be paranoid, but in the long term, you need to be optimistic. And I think that is just such great advice because in the short term, so many things can go wrong with a rental property. But if you can just hang on through those tough periods, things generally get better over a long period of time. I don't know if my guest today heard that show or not, but he is really living that philosophy. He had a really rough start to buying his first couple of properties. In his first year, his tenants didn't work out, and he ended up having to evict them. And then in his second year, his tenants got mad at him. They had some kind of a disagreement or something, and the tenants ended up flooding the property and causing a ton of damage. So I think a lot of people would maybe say this isn't for them or maybe give up, but my guest isn't thinking that way. He really loves rentals still, and he's learned from this, and he is continuing to build his portfolio. He's got a great story, so let's take a real quick break. We'll come back in 60 seconds and we'll meet Justin Frazier from Milltown, New Jersey.
Would you like to know the easiest way to create wealth and passive income with real estate? This is Marco Santarelli with Norada Real Estate Investments. Now you can access the best deals without the stress or hassle of having to find, renovate, or manage those properties. We save you time by providing you with passive income investment properties in some of the best U.S. markets. Learn more by downloading your free copy of The Ultimate Guide to Passive Real Estate Investing. There's no obligation and nothing to buy. Simply visit PassiveRealEstateGuide.com and get your free copy today. That's PassiveRealEstateGuide.com.
Whether you want to buy your first rental or you're an experienced investor, you probably already know that having someone on your team to help you finance a property is one of the most important things that you can do as an investor. Chailey Ridge has helped thousands of investors generate rental income by getting the right financing in place for their unique situation. She's an experienced investor herself, as well as an expert on financing rentals. See what she can do for you. Find out more today at RidgeLendingGroup.com. That's R-I-D-G-E, LendingGroup.com. Hey, Justin, welcome to the podcast. So what got you first interested in owning rentals?
Hey, Dan. Man, rental property investing. I was sitting at work one day and I was thinking, man, I had gotten a new job and I was like, I'm making a little bit of money. I need, you know, a 401k or something, or where do I put my money? Should I buy stocks? And I just started researching and came across Bigger Pockets and was like, man, I could do this. I could buy a rental property and make, you know, double digits on my money, and I'd be in control. I would pick the tenants and the finishes, and that was really appealing to me. So I decided, you know what, let's just jump right in. I had a little bit of money saved up and I said, let's do it.
Awesome. So you bought your first property just that quickly, or did you take a bunch of time to do research and kind of figure out how everything works?
I like to do a lot of research, but I was also careful of analysis paralysis. I didn't want to get bogged down. I think from the time I started researching to the time I made the offer that I ended up buying the house on was within 6 months.
Okay. That's pretty awesome, because I think the trap a lot of people fall into is that, like you said, they get into that analysis paralysis where they feel like they need to know everything before they get started. And I think that's good. So you did some research. You kind of got comfortable with the idea, and then you bought your first property. So tell me about this house. Like, how did you find it? How did you finance it? Give me some details.
Yeah. So I started probably 3 months into my research process. I started looking, and I found a realtor that was an investor. And I actually just, I wasn't part of a RIA or anything. So I just called a bunch of real estate offices and said, I'm looking for a realtor that knows investing. And in my area, houses were pretty expensive. And I had about $20,000. And I said that, you know, at a down payment of 25%, that means I need a house somewhere in the $60,000 to $80,000 mm-hmm. range.
Yeah.
And so that for me meant Trenton, New Jersey. And so that's just where the houses were priced that way. So I was a little nervous, but you know, I partnered with this realtor who brought me up and down through the neighborhoods, pointed me, said, don't go down there and, you know, look in this area. That's okay. And so we just looked at house after house after house. And I was just so dedicated. I mean, my nights and my weekends, and my wife never saw me, and yeah. I was just very busy with it, but it was something that I knew I wanted to do, but I was nervous about renovation. Because mm-hmm. I never dealt with contractors yeah. before. So I was looking for a very specific house that didn't need fix up or didn't need much fix up. I was like deathly afraid of getting ripped off by contractors yeah. and not knowing. So I was looking for that one house in Trenton that did not smell like cat urine and that was not totally messed up. And so eventually I found it, and we got it, and I bought it for $81,000-$82,000. Which was right where I wanted awesome. It to be because yeah. it was fixed up.
And it was ready to go. Like it literally needed no work. Awesome.
It needed no work. I was able to the day one, I was able to list it. It didn't need anything.
And how far was that property from where you were living or where you live?
About 30 minutes.
Okay. That's not bad. Okay. Yeah. So you closed on that property. Were you able to rent it out right away?
Yeah. I mean, day one, I think I might have closed on Thursday or Friday, and Saturday I was out there with my for rent sign that I bought at Home Depot, and you know, I'd posted it on Zillow, and I was just hanging out at the property, and I had a lot of foot traffic because it's in the city. I had a lot of foot traffic, people coming in, taking a look, and I think within a week I had tenants in there by the next week.
That's great. And so how did things go at first? Everything was fine at first with the tenants? They paid?
You know, at first I was like, man, this is great. They're paying. I got my security deposit. I got my rent. And then I think by month three, they started paying late. And, you know, I'm kind of an optimistic guy. And I was like, great, I'm getting an extra, you know, a few dollars each month for my late fee. So mm-hmm. now I'm making even more money.
Right,
and I'm
right.
like updating my ROI calculators. I'm like, this is fantastic. Yeah. And then about 2 or 3 months after that, those late fees stopped coming and the rents stopped coming altogether. And I was sort of stuck. And so I reached out to them. They weren't, you know, they always had some kind of excuse. And I've never known anyone who got so many envelopes lost in the mail, you know. And so they gave me every excuse in the book. And so eventually I did have to file eviction on them. And, you know, I was like, it was a tough process for me because I felt like, man, I was so excited. And now I've failed like less than a year into this.
Right.
But, you know, I hired an eviction attorney and went through it, and, you know, they were a little rough on the property on the way out, but nothing, you know, it was probably a few $1,000s of repairs. And I learned my lesson. I was like, man, I'm never going to, you know, I didn't screen them properly. I knew that. I was very emotional about how they got in. My lease wasn't very strong. Talked to some attorneys and really came up with a pretty strong lease. And felt like, look, I don't want to get taken advantage of again. And so that really formed a lot of my mentality that I have right now about how to deal with tenants and how much leeway to give them.
Yeah, I think you've made two really good points there. So the first is screening, that you would do a better job of screening. Did you screen these tenants at all?
I did. I got, you know, I ran the credit check, everything that, you know, I read online that I was supposed to do. But then I let them in with like a, you know, high 400 credit score or something. And, you know, they had given me their emotional story, and, you know, they didn't have a criminal record. So I thought, okay, well, there's that. And, you know, they tell me they're going to pay. They say they're going to pay, and they had the income.
Yeah.
So I said, fine. We'll figure it out.
All right, so they had a low credit score. They had income. So what do you think changed? I mean, they were paying at first. Like, looking back on it, like, do you have any idea, like, what may have changed?
I don't know. Yeah. I think that they just, you know, I think they were probably were stretching a little bit to hit the rental amount. And, you know, bills just pile up. And I think the husband had sort of a seasonal job where work was busier in some months and less busy in the other months. And so I think that when I reviewed his pay stubs, he had been, you know, working a lot of overtime and had a really healthy income.
Okay.
And then when the winter came around, he wasn't really making
right.
as much.
Right. Okay. So I looking forward, so you wouldn't rent anymore to someone with a 400 credit score.
Right.
Is that
right.
Okay. And then for the income, would you just not count overtime pay?
Like, yeah, I kind of actually would probably talk to I would talk to their manager or get some more of the story on,
yeah.
you know, if it's overtime year round and it's always that and they're always getting that, you know, I might consider
right.
it. But mostly I'm looking at that 40 hours a week
okay.
and seeing what's coming in.
And yeah. then as far as their other screening things, like, did you check their previous landlord to get a reference, or
they moved out of their parents' house? So
there wasn't one.
Was living
okay.
with yeah. So
okay.
I mean, okay. I'm like, okay, I could call your mom, but
yeah, yeah right, your mom's right. Gonna, what you right. gonna say, right?
Yeah.
So the other thing you said is that you would have a stronger lease now. So what do you put in the lease now that you didn't have in there before?
I'm very clear about, you know, okay, you have until the 5th for the grace period, and then the 6th, you get your notice, and then, you know, I file for eviction. The timeline is very clear, right? And there's
yeah.
no wiggle room, and I'm going to file the earliest day that I can file, no matter what your story is. And if you can catch up and pay the court fees, great. But that's, you know, it's all sort of built in, and
right.
I take that emotion out of it, and it's just I go by the calendar. If I don't have the rent right. by a certain day, then this happens.
Yeah, that's the way to do it. I mean, because you can always stop it. You know, if you start the eviction process, you can always stop it if they pay. So
right.
it's always good to get that going and not take any chances. All right, so you get them out of there, and
yeah.
so that was your full first year that
yep.
they paid you for a few months. So cash flow wise, you didn't have rent for a few months, right? So did you end up losing money after the first year on that property?
It
I mean,
was
you must have, right?
6 months. It was 6 months that I actually, from the time I got the last check from them to the first check from the next tenant. And so that was, you know, that's a long time to go, half a
yeah.
year without any income
sure.
coming in. But they also didn't have many, there was like, no maintenance or repairs
okay.
or anything. So I think I came out ahead by a few hundred bucks that
okay.
first year.
Okay. All right. That's good. Okay. All
yeah.
right. So then you get them out of there. You get the next tenants in. Tell me what happened with
yeah,
these
Yeah, let
tenants.
Me tell you about these guys. Because I, you know, I had my new lease and I was all ready to go. And I screened them. And it was another young family. And their references checked out. Their previous landlord spoke very highly of them. And it was a couple, some kids, and the woman's sister was living. They were all on the lease, and everyone was on the lease. Everything was to buy the book, and
mm-hmm.
I was very happy to move them in. They met all the criteria, and so for the first year with them, things were great. And I thought, all right, now I've got things figured out. You know, I did it right.
Mm-hmm.
And so then about this is actually just last fall. Things had communication had slowed down. They were on their second year of the lease. Now I had renewed them, and then all of a sudden communication started slowing down, and I wasn't hearing from them as much. And you know, looking back, that should have been a sign that I should have gone and checked out the property, but I didn't, and I was, you know, maybe being a little lazy, maybe just trusting them, and you know, because the first year had gone so well. And I get a call from my neighbor. The next door neighbor had my business card, which is a tip that I tell everyone now, is make sure your neighbors have your information to call you if something looks fishy
that.
At the property.
Yep, that's good.
Yeah. So my neighbor calls me and says, look, there's water coming into my basement and it seems to be coming from your house. And I've been knocking on the door and I haven't seen those guys in like 2 weeks.
Oh no.
Yeah. So that's never a good call. And so my handyman got down there first and he went in and turned off what the water on the second floor bathroom was running. They left it in the bathroom sink running and they had clogged the drain. And the water just spilled over. And so we're thinking it was somewhere around 2 weeks of water just pouring out of that faucet. Yeah. So that came from the second floor. The water, you know, soaked into the floor and walls and everything up there. And then went down into the kitchen, bringing the kitchen ceiling with it, all the sheetrock, all the layers of tile and sheetrock and everything that was underneath that sheetrock because this house was built in the 1930s. So there's a lot of stuff up in there. And then it came down and got through the hardwood floors and through the appliances and the kitchen cabinets and went all the way to the basement. We had 8 inches of water in the basement.
Now, why do you think this happened? Like, did you have any indication that the tenants were this mad that they would do this?
You know, I really didn't. I thought we had a good relationship. The only thing, and I've asked myself this question a lot, but, you know, that looking back, the communication changed. And, you know, at one point later on, I did get a hold of the husband and we were chatting a little bit. And, you know, he said he alluded to some issues in the relationship. And then the sister was there as well. And it seems like he and the sister did not get along. And so I think that she, you know, I think the story is that they were going to move out and she was not happy. And so the sister, and so she was retaliating against me for some reason, but maybe against them. And so I think that's what happened.
Okay.
But this is sort of hearsay and through, you know, through the tenant himself. So I'm still not 100% sure what happened.
Yeah.
I just know the fallout of what happened and what I've had to deal with since.
Now you've got thousands and thousands of dollars in damage to this property, but I'm assuming your insurance is going to pay for this, right?
Yes. Yeah, so thankfully I had very good insurance. This house is in my personal name. And so the insurance company I was using is the same company I use in my personal home and everything else. And so I was paying probably way more than per month than most investors do, but it was my first deal. And so I wanted to be protected. And thankfully I was. And so they covered everything. They
awesome.
Covered everything from the taking out all the trash that the tenants had left in the basement that was now waterlogged and soaked, all the sheetrock and wood and floors and everything that had been wet. And it was September-ish. So it was still pretty hot. So there's mold growing everywhere because it had been weeks. So they did all the mold remediation and basically took this house from the second floor and the first floor in the basement just down to the studs. And that also mean they had to rip out my furnace that had now been flooded, the hot water heater, the appliances in the kitchen, washers and dryers, everything had to be taken out.
I mean, I hope that anyone listening to this takes away the importance of having good insurance. So your insurance company is basically getting you a brand new house. I mean, this house is like a freshly rehabbed property.
Right. And another key thing is to look for that lost rent insurance.
Yeah.
Because while this has been going on, the insurance company was paying they looked at my lease and they've been paying me what my lease amount was.
That's great. So still getting a check every month from the insurance company.
Correct.
That is awesome.
And I get it every month. It's not even like it's one payment at the end. So I can still make my mortgage and I'm not coming out of my pocket for that. It's all coming now from the insurance company.
So after this experience, you know, I think a lot of people might be scared off. And, you know, maybe someone listening right now is thinking, God, why would I ever buy a rental property? This sounds horrible. But I think it's not horrible because, like, you really were made whole by your insurance company. And with the eviction, you were still profitable. So, like, this house still, to me, seems like it's a good investment. And it's probably going to be even better going forward because you're probably not going to have much maintenance.
And yeah, I love real estate investing. I gotta tell you, I feel like I've gone through some rough situations. I know there are some worse out there, but I've, you know, most new landlords are scared of evictions and they're scared of their tenants destroying their house. And I've gone through it all in the same house, all within a period of years here. And, you know, you come out okay. If you have a good insurance policy, you figure it out. And for me, this was always been like a test case, a proof of concept. You know, can I be a landlord? Can I figure out how to interact with tenants? You know, how do I pay my bills and all that sort of stuff so that I can then build a real estate business and scale it in the future. So even if I was losing money on this first one, I'm still getting a really great experience.
Right.
And, you know, at the end of the day, like my mortgage is still getting paid down. So even if I wasn't cash flow positive, there's still other benefits like the tax benefits and the mortgage pay down that I'm getting.
And so you've bought a few other single families since this property, right?
Yes. Yep.
And how have they been working out? Have you had the same kinds of problems or has everything been going?
Not at all. Nope. No major problems. I mean, I brought on a business partner and we have two of those properties together and it's been smooth sailing, I've got to say. And a lot of it, I think, comes from the challenges that I've had. I changed my processes and we go and we check on the properties now every 2 to 3 months and we really don't leave room for our own mistakes anymore.
Yeah.
And so we set up some processes and we just follow them so that we don't get in trouble. And we see issues before they become big issues.
Yeah. Are the other properties in the same price range and the same area?
Yeah, those other two rental properties are in Trenton and Hamilton, same next door towns to each other, and they're all in similar prices and similar tenants, similar neighborhoods. But they cash flow great.
Yeah. So you just had the wrong two tenants in that property, right?
And I was inexperienced and I just, you know, I just had to work through some of that. And yeah, sometimes you don't know. You don't know what the tenant's going to do. These tenants came highly recommended. There's only so much screening that a person can do.
Right.
If the income makes sense and there's no criminal record and the previous references check out, and you know their credit score is good. What else can you really do?
You know, especially with those second tenants. I mean, they were good for a full year, right? I mean, it wasn't until the second year that things went bad,
right?
I hope that this doesn't scare anyone off from investing in rentals because I really think that investing in rentals is awesome. Well, Justin, if someone wants to reach out to you, what's the best way for someone to look you up online?
Yeah, they can go to my website, 88realestatecapital.com, 88realestatecapital. We are working on some bigger projects now and moving into apartment syndication and we just closed on a 40 unit property down in Virginia. And so we have a lot of exciting things happening. And also I sort of document all of my challenges on YouTube. So if you go onto the website, there's a link over to our YouTube channel. And whether it's, you know, me walking through a property or I actually have a video of me walking through that house that got flooded the very first time I walked through it. And so it's like 12 minutes of me being real and like turning each corner, figuring out what new surprise was waiting for me. So
yeah, I got to look that up.
It's all there live and, you know, it's unfiltered. And I just try to, you know, not glam it up. It's not like HGTV. It's just real investing and we show off what's happening.
If you want to look up Justin's website or his YouTube channel, I've got links to everything on my website. You can find it at rentalincomepodcast.com/episode180. Thank you so much for listening and subscribing to the podcast. If this is your first time listening, make sure you hit that subscribe button and you'll get new episodes delivered to you automatically every single Tuesday. My name is Dan Lane, and this has been the Rental Income Podcast.
You love podcasts, the stories, the laughs, the unexpected turns. But when this episode ends, the silence starts. Not anymore. Audiobooks.com turns that silence into your next great adventure. With over 450,000 titles, from bestsellers to hidden gems, your love for listening just found its new best friend. And because you already know the joy of audio, we're giving you 3 free audiobooks to start your journey. Imagine your favorite podcast, now with unlimited episodes. That's audiobooks.com. Keep the story going. Sign up for your free trial at audiobooks.com/podcastfree today. Because for podcast lovers like you, the end of an episode is just the beginning. That's audiobooks.com/podcastfree.